Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India.
The title of today's show, The Passing of Bhishma. After the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, the funeral rites for the departed heroes were performed in a very grand manner. After it was all over, Yudhishthira came to Lord Sri Krishna and stood before him with his palms folded. He said,
"My lord, you have given me back my kingdom after all these years. For my sake you have done so many tasks. In your affection for me, you have played the role of a man. You, who must be worshipped as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the Lord of Lords, and you have acted just like an ordinary man, and you have been affected by the joys and sorrows which troubled us. With us you have wept, and with us you have smiled. You have shown us the way to truth, and you have been our guide. I don't know what to say. My heart is full of emotion. I have always followed your advice. Now I fall at your feet and wash them with my tears. That is all I can do in return for all you have done for us."
Krishna lifted up Yudhishthira. He spoke sweet and gentle words to him and to all the other brothers. The next day in the morning, Yudhishthira came to the presence of Lord Sri Krishna. He found him to be in a thoughtful mood. Seeing the king, Lord Krishna smiled at him and spoke to him. The king said,
"What makes you so thoughtful, Krishna?"
And Lord Krishna replied,
"I was thinking of your grandfather, Bhishma. He has reached the last few days of his life on this earth. You wanted to learn so much from him. I was thinking of going to see him. Now he's calling me in his mind. I wanted to ask you to accompany me. That was the reason for my abstraction."
And Yudhishthira said,
"We will do what you suggest."
Krishna looked at Satyaki and said,
"Satyaki, ask Daruka to prepare my chariot. You must also prepare yourself. We must go to the field where the Kuru ancient is lying on a bed of arrows."
Lord Krishna's chariot was ready. Daruka came and announced it, and the entire group left for the field. In several chariots they went to the battlefield. They abandoned their chariots and went on foot to the presence of the great Bhishma. He looked like the setting sun. Krishna went forward and spoke to him. He was feeling so unhappy to see the great man suffering so much pain and agony. He sat by his side and spoke gentle words, saying,
"How are you faring, my lord? The power you have to hold death at bay is not given to everybody. Your strength of will is amazing. If a needle point pricks me, I cannot bear the pain. How can you bear the pain caused by 1,000 arrows which are lodged in your body? There is no one like you in this world. Besides, you are the home of all knowledge. You have been the pupil of Brihaspati, Shukra, Vashishta, and Markandeya. You are the storehouse of all wisdom. You are the greatest hero. You have always followed the path of righteousness, and formerly you were the foremost of the Vasus. You are the greatest man that has ever graced the world of men. You must now pacify Yudhishthira, who is grieved because he was the cause of the death of his cousins. He has been pacified by Vyasa himself, and he wants to rule the kingdom as well as his ancestors did. You must now teach him all that you know. You must make him shake off this sorrow and rule the kingdom properly. You are the only person who can help him."
Bhishma Bhishma heard the words of Lord Krishna. He raised his head a little and looked at him. A smile hovered at the corner of his lips, and he said,
"My Lord, you are the eternal soul that pervades this universe. You are the home of all knowledge and all wisdom. Tell me what I should do. I do not know how long I will have to live yet. I've lost count of time. At least I've cleared my debt to Satyavati. I'm waiting for the time when the sun's chariot changes its direction and proceeds to the north. I want you to tell me when I can see your Vishwarup. I am impatient to see your form, my lord."
Lord Krishna replied,
"Bhishma, you have 65 days more to live on this world. I will be by your side when you give up this bondage to go home back to Godhead. When you go, all that immense knowledge will go with you, and it will be unavailable to people then. I want you now to talk to Yudhisthira about all that you know. Please do it."
Bhishma told him,
"Krishna, you're trying to laugh at me. Your words are full of love, but when you, the home of all knowledge, when you are here, how can I dare to talk about Dharma and conduct to Yudhisthira? If I do, it will be impertinent. It will be like a student trying to talk in the presence of his teacher. It is wrong, my lord."
And Lord Krishna smiled and said,
"You are very modest. It is becoming that you should speak so humbly of yourself. But I want you to talk to Yudhisthira."
And Bhishma replied,
"Krishna, I am weak with my wounds. My pain is unbearable. My memory has become clouded. You are asking me to remember things which I learnt when I was in heaven with my mother. I do not think I have strength in my body or in my mind to undertake this task which you want to assign to me."
And Krishna replied,
"I will grant you a boon. This pain and this weakness will not be there until the day you die. Your memory will be unclouded. Your perception will be as clean as the blade of a sword. You will be able to unravel the most intricate knots of the mysteries of the universe. You will know all there is to know by my grace."
The heavens rained flowers on Bhishma and Lord Krishna when these words were spoken. Lord Krishna got up and saluted Bhishma and took his leave of him, saying,
"We will return to Bhishma tomorrow."
The night passed pleasantly for all of them. Lord Krishna slept a dreamless sleep after so many days. Early in the morning, he sent Satyaki to Yudhisthira. Satyaki went to the king and said,
"Krishna is ready to see the great Bhishma. He wants to know if you are ready to leave for the field."
At once, Yudhisthira and his brothers set out for that field, accompanied by Lord Krishna and Satyaki. They hurried to the presence of Bhishma. He now looked as glorious and fresh as the rising sun. Lord Krishna sat by his side and asked him how he was, and Bhishma replied,
"Krishna, I am free of all the pain and the agony from the moment you granted me the boon. I am feeling alert mentally, too. I am feeling immensely pleased with myself. But Krishna, I want to ask a question of you. Why do you want me to give this discourse on the religion and duties of a Kshatriya? Why do you not speak to Yudhisthira yourself? I want to know the reason for this."
Lord Krishna smiled a gentle smile and replied,
"You are right, I can tell him everything. But I have decided to bring you everlasting glory. I have decided to speak through you as my instrument. I want the world to remember you always, forever and ever. The world of men will hereafter take your words to be as sacred as the Vedas. Every action of man in the days to come will be dictated by the rules set down by you. A man is said to live in this world as long as his fame lives. Bhishma, I want you to live forever. That is why I am asking you to speak.
Bhishma's tears flowed slowly and silently. He could not speak. This love Krishna had for him was too sacred for him to talk about. He composed himself finally and said,
Tell Yudhisthira to ask me any question he wants. I am ready to answer him.
And Krishna replied,
Yudhisthira feels guilty. He does not dare to come to your presence, since he thinks that he is the cause of the destruction of all the Kshatriyas and his own cousins.
Bhishma smiled tenderly and called Yudhisthira to him. He placed his old hands on the king's head and said,
My child, the duty of a Kshatriya is to fight and kill. You had to do what you did. You've been a real Kshatriya. You must not grieve for having done your duty. Come now, Krishna tells me that your understanding is clouded because of the many doubts you have about true conduct. I hear that you want to learn the art of ruling the kingdom well. I will tell you everything, my child. It was taught to me by the great masters, and I will impart it all to you with the grace of this Lord Krishna, who is pleased to walk on this earth, calling himself a member of the Yadu dynasty.
Yudhisthira began to speak and asked,
It has been said by the wise that kingly duties constitute the highest science. Please tell me about the duties of a king.
Bhishma was immensely pleased with the humility and eagerness of Yudhisthira. He smiled at him and said,
My child, I am only too eager to tell you all that you want to know. A king's first duty is to worship the gods and the Brahmins. The next, or rather the next equally important duty of a king, is truth. His behavior should be above reproach. Self-restraint, humility, and righteousness are qualities which you have to look for in a king if he has to be successful, and he should have his passions under perfect control. Justice should be second nature of the king. His conduct should also be straightforward. Another danger for the king is mildness. He shouldn't be too mild, but at the same time he shouldn't be too fierce either. When the occasion demands, he should be as soft as a rose, and when the occasion demands, he should be as hard as a thunderbolt. Alertness is also a great necessity for a king. He should carefully study his foes and his friends too, incessantly. A king must consider that his first duty is to his subjects. He should guard them as a mother guards the child in her womb. A king should be careful not to place implicit confidence in anyone. His innermost thoughts must be concealed from even his nearest and dearest, and he should not tell anyone about his decisions until he's ready to enact them. A king should be pleasant in speech. He should have about him men who are all like him in nature and noble qualities. The best king is one whose subjects live in freedom and happiness as they do in their father's house. Peace will be theirs and contentment. There will be no wickedness, no pretense, no dishonesty, and no envy. The very core of a king's duty is the protection of his subjects and their happiness. He should be proficient in the art of choosing honest men to hold important offices. Then also the king should remember that his treasury should always be full. Also, he must produce disloyalty among the people in a hostile country, and there he must also have friends and allies. He should amass troops, and if he's going to fight, this should be done in secret. A king can never protect his kingdom by candor and by simplicity. A king should be both candid and crooked, too. He must employ crookedness and wrong acts when he wants to subdue the enemy. All these things should be concealed behind a candid and open exterior.
Yudhisthira then asked,
"How did the word Raja come into use when a king is addressed?"
"A king is like any other human being on the earth. His body and limbs are like those of anyone else. His understanding, his senses, are similar to those of many others. He has the same joys and griefs, the same number of years to live on the earth, like anybody else. How then did it happen that he is considered different? This world is made up of men who are far superior to him in intelligence, bravery, and all accomplishments, and yet this one man rules the others, though they are superior to him. Why should it be the rule that one man is worshipped by all others?" And Bhishma answered,
"I will tell you, Yudhisthira. In the beginning there was no king. There was no punishment. These things were not needed then. Men were all righteous, and each man protected the other. As time passed on, however, the hearts of men began to be, shall we say, invaded by errors. And once error enters the heart, then the mind gets clouded, and the sense of right and wrong begins to wane. It was even so with the men of distant times. Covetousness was the first guest in their hearts. When covetousness came into life, men began to want things which did not belong to them. After that, the next passion to be born was lust. Lust can never exist alone, and it has to have a companion, and so wrath and anger came into existence. As soon as these terrible passions found places in the hearts of men, righteousness had to beat a hasty retreat. Thus there came into the world a great king who was Vishnu or Krishna himself to set an example of righteous living. His name was Prithu. He made the surface of the earth level so people could perform agriculture and grow crops. Vishnu and the gods assembled to crown Prithu king. The earth took a form and came to him with tributes, gems, and jewels. Prithu milked the earth, who had taken the form of a cow, and made her yield 7 kinds of crops for the food of all living creatures. He made all men regard religion as the foremost of all things. Because he pleased all the people, he was called Rajan. Because he healed the wounds of the afflicted people, he was called Kshatriya. And again, because the earth became celebrated for the prevalence of virtue during his reign, she was called Prithivi.
Yudhisthira asked, "What other special duties should a king discharge?"
"A king should first know how to bring himself under subjugation. When he has achieved this, he should then try to subdue his foes. The conquest of the 5 senses is considered to be the greatest victory. It is only such a king that is capable then of conquering his external enemies. A king should have an immense number of soldiers in his forts, cities, frontiers, and all important spots. A king's thoughts and actions, decisions, and spies should be kept secret from everyone, especially the enemy. A king should take a 1/6 of the income of his subjects. This is for the maintenance of the army and for their protection. A king's subjects are his children, but he should guard against compassion while punishing them for their wrong behavior. Honest men who are absolutely trustworthy should be appointed to administer justice."
And Judas Yudhisthira asked, "Of whose wealth is the king said to be the lord?"
"The Vedas have declared that the wealth of all persons belongs to the king, with the exception of the Brahmins, the representatives of Sri Krishna. The king's duty is to support all these Brahmins and thus uphold religiosity in his kingdom. The king should level taxes, but they should never be so high as to hurt the subjects. He should know how to expertly milk his kingdom. He should be like a bee gathering honey from the flowers. He should be a leech which draws blood mildly without the victim being conscious of it. He should behave like a tigress with her cubs while handling his subjects. She catches them with her teeth, and yet she never hurts them."
Yudhisthira then asked how a king should behave.
"Righteousness, Yudhisthira, is the watchword of a king. Nothing is greater than that in this world. A righteous king can easily conquer the entire world. His counselors should all be pure in heart and pure in mind. Malice should have no place in the heart of a king. His senses should be perfectly under control. He should use his intelligence, and he will then be glorious, swelling in greatness like the ocean fed with the waters of 1,000 rivers."
Yudhisthira then asked, "Who is the one God in the world, the one object which is our sole refuge? By worshipping whom does one obtain all that one desires? Which is the one religion which is the foremost of all religions? What is the mantra, reciting which man becomes freed from the bondage of birth and death?"
"The one supreme God, Yudhisthira, is standing right here before us. He is Krishna, and he is the Lord of the universe. He is the God of gods, the foremost of all beings. By him is pervaded this universe. Meditating on him and on his many names, man can transcend all sorrow. The foremost of all religions is Krishna. He is the highest energy. He is the highest penance. He is the highest refuge. He is the holiest of holies. He is the beginning of all creation and also the end of all creation. Krishna is the eternal Brahman. Surrender yourself to him and become his devotee."
The days of instruction were now over. And Bhishma said,
"My child, I have taught you all that you wanted to learn. Go back to your kingdom and begin your rule. The people will be as happy as they were when formerly the great kings Nahusha, Hardaschand, and Yayati ruled the world. You carry my blessings with you. Go, my child, and come to me when the sun is in the northern sky. I have been waiting for that auspicious moment to leave my body. I will see you once again then."
In this way, Bhishma described all the duties of the king, and Yudhisthira listened with humility and attention. And then Yudhisthira took tender leave of him, and they all went back to Hastinapur. When the holy day came, the day which was to grant Bhishma freedom from this human body, all the Pandavas, led by Dhritarashtra and Lord Krishna, went to the field carrying auspicious things with them, flowers and incense and gems and fruits and costly silks. Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, the five brothers with Draupadi, Lord Krishna and Satyaki, Vidura and Yuyutsu went to the field where Bhishma was waiting for his release. They walked to his presence. Bhishma was surrounded by all the great sages, Vyas, Parashara, Narada, and all the rishis from the heavens were by the side of Bhishma. Yudhisthira saluted his grandfather and said,
"My lord, I am Yudhisthira the Pandava. I am here with my brothers and all those who are near and dear to you. The entire city of Hastinapur has come to pay its respect to your honored self. Dhritarashtra is also here. My lord, Sri Krishna is here. Be pleased to open your eyes and look on all of us."
Bhishma opened his tired eyes and looked at the ocean of people who had assembled to pay him respect. He said,
"I am happy to see you with all these people, my child. At long last, the sun has turned his chariot towards the north. It seems to me as though 100 years have passed by since I first lay me down on this bed of arrows. The month of Magha has finally arrived. It's time for me to leave this earth."
Bhishma then turned to Dhritarashtra and said,
"My son, you know all the duties of a king. There's nothing that you do not know. Wise as you are, you should not grieve for the death of your 100 sons. It was fate. Yudhisthira and his brothers are now your sons, and they are devoted to you. Be happy and contented in their association."
Bhishma then turned his eyes on Lord Krishna, and he called for flowers and worshipped the Lord with them. He said,
"You are the Lord of the universe. You are the Purusha, and you are the creator of the world. You are the supreme eternal soul. Reveal to me your universal form, and grant me permission to depart from this world and join you in the spiritual world. Grant me leave to cast off this human body. Permitted by you, I will reach the highest abode."
Bhishma saw the infinite splendor of the Lord's universal form, and Lord Krishna said,
"Bhishma, I do grant you leave to go back to home, back to Godhead. You will never be born again in this world of mortal men. Death is waiting at your doorstep, waiting like a servant for your summons. You can die whenever you like."
Bhishma's face was lit up by an unearthly smile. He closed his eyes and lay still for a few moments. He made a gentle effort and willed himself to die. Those around him saw a wonderful glow leave his body. It rose up in the sky and became lost in the clouds. There was heard heavenly instruments making sweet music. The sky was filled with it. A cool breeze blew, laden with the perfume of 1,000 heavenly flowers. The earth was cool and pleasant. The heart of everyone was filled with a strange peace when the soul of Bhishma went on its journey to the heavens. They placed his body, still riddled with arrows, on a pyre made of sandalwood. Yudhisthira and Vidura wrapped the body of the great man in silk and flowers. Yuyutsu held the royal white umbrella over it. The funeral procession was solemn and splendid. The Samavedas were chanted by the Brahmins, and Dhritarashtra set fire to the pyre. Yudhisthira and his brothers, along with Vidura and Dhritarashtra, stood on the right side. The next day, they collected the bones of Bhishma and went to the river Ganges. They offered the oblations to the Ganges, who had given birth to Bhishma. The river stopped flowing, and personification of Ganges rose up from the river and came ashore, weeping and lamenting her child.
she looked at all the many who had assembled there and said,
"My child is dead. He was a devoted son, and he was loved by all. He was invincible. Even the great Bhagava had to admit defeat at the hands of my child. And such a hero has been killed by Sikandi. Surely my heart is made of stone, or else it should have been broken long ago. The man who was without an equal in the entire world has been killed. I have lost my child. I had hopes of his ruling this world, and now I see him dead. My child, my poor, unfortunate child, is dead, and I am left lamenting."
Her grief was terrible, and Lord Krishna went near her and said,
"Weep not, mother of the world. Your son has gone to the world to which he belongs. You know that he was one of the Vasus and had to spend these years in the world because of a curse. He is not made like the other men. He is not meant to govern the kingdom like ordinary kings. Do not grieve for him. Do not let your human affections cloud your wisdom. Your son was a god, and he is again one with the gods. There is nothing here for you to grieve. Rejoice that he has at last been released from the curse to live on the world of mortal men."
The Ganges personified disappeared from their sight, and the river resumed its flow. It flowed placidly on, as it had been flowing since the beginning of time. With sorrow and gladness blended in a strange manner, they all returned to the city, Hastinapur.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.